Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, I'm Nicholas Gordon, host of the Asian Review of Books podcast done with the New Books Network. In this podcast, we interview fiction and nonfiction authors working in, around, and about the Asia-Pacific region. The characters in Nishant Injam's The Best Possible Experience, his debut short story collection, are like many in India or in Indian communities in the United States, working hard and enduring hardships to try and get a better life for themselves. They don't always succeed, and even those that do lose something along the way. That tension between hope and reality is at the core of many of Nishant's stories, whether it's a recently migrated Indian family panicking that a white boy is coming to dinner, or a college student trying and failing to get a visa, or a young son in Goa increasingly frustrated with his tour bus driver father, prone to embellishment and exaggeration. Nishant received an MFA from the Helen Zell Writers Program at the University of Michigan. He is the recipient of a Penn/Robert J. Dow Short Story Prize and a Cecilia Joyce Johnson Emerging Writer Award from the Key West Literary Seminar. His work has appeared in Zoetrope All-Story, ZYZZYVA, the Virginia Quarterly Review, the Georgia Review, Best Debut Short Story 2021, and the Best American Magazine Writing 2022. Today, Nishant and I talk about why he pivoted from tech to creative writing, how his stories relate to the Indian experience, and the trials of Indians and Indian Americans trying to improve their lives. So, Nishant, thank you for coming on the show today to talk about The Best Possible Experience, your short story collection. Perhaps it's best to start kind of with why you decided to write this collection in the first place. What kind of events, what kind of things inspired you to kind of put this collection of stories together?
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's a long story, so you'll have to bear with me for a little bit. I'd never actually planned on becoming a writer. I was never even a scribbler. I never journaled. I wasn't much of a reader either. I read some books as a child, but I wasn't like a huge reader either. I moved to the US for a master's degree in computer science, and my whole intention with pursuing a route in technology was to be able to be in a position where I could send money home and like help my family out a little bit. And so I was very much this brown tech immigrant in the States, and I didn't realize how isolating the experience of immigration would be, and how much lonely I would be as a person. And I think somewhere along the way, I sort of began writing as a way to keep my country next to me, to preserve a home. The poet Ilya Kaminsky writes in this poem, Joseph Brodsky's Dead, he writes, "In plain speech, for sweetness between the lines is no longer important. What you call immigration, I call suicide." So it's sort of that those lines really spoke to me in the sense that I felt like my previous self had died in a way that because as an immigrant in America, I was far away from family. I was far away from the people I loved or the people who loved me, and I didn't have many friends and I didn't have any money. I was stuck. I was in this program, doing a master's in computer science. I had a loan, and right after that, I had to I picked up a job. So and I was in a visa. I was basically doing a job that I didn't like, and I was in a visa that didn't let me switch as easily. And I had all these factors like keeping me anchored in America, even though I didn't really want to, because I had to pay off the loans, I had to keep the visa going, and all of that. And I had all these obligations, so it felt pretty heavy, as if there was a chain around my neck, tightening and squeezing me. I think somewhere. In those days, I think I felt like I needed to do something to make sure there was still the old me in me somewhere, and writing became an answer for that, like as a way of preserving that, and that's how I sort of began writing this story collection. I didn't even realize that I was writing a story collection. I was just writing stories. That would, in some fashion, take parts of myself, the emotional aspects that I was sort of carrying all, and then put them in the form of story, so I could still have those replicas, like these textual replicas of home around me.
So I wanted to kind of get into something that you're talking about, kind of the lonely experience of kind of being an immigrant, especially a new immigrant in the United States. And something that struck me in a lot of your stories is the kind of tension between hope and reality. And that's through all your stories, not just the ones kind of based in the US, but also the ones based in India. With a lot of people kind of potentially maybe striving for a better life or trying to achieve a better life and then always bumping up against reality that kind of forces them to be more realistic or drags them back down or however you want to describe it. I guess why focus on that tension specifically, kind of between hope and the real world?
Great question. I think that's such a universal concern though. I mean, I guess, Nicholas, you're in Hong Kong. Are you happy doing what you're doing? Are you exactly where you dreamt yourself to be? Or you know, there's always this, I mean, you don't have to answer the question, but what I'm trying to say is that there's always this tension underlying in our own narratives, right? In the narratives that we construct about ourselves, we always have aspirations. We always have dreams that might or might not come true, but we do journey towards them. I mean, that's how we make sense of our own lives, and that's, I felt like that's a universal thing. I mean, it's not really specific to me or my characters. Like, I think everybody in the world has that tension in their lives.
So I'd like to maybe start talking a bit more deeply about the stories in your collection. But before I do that, I might invite you to do a reading, maybe of part of one of your stories.
I can read from a story called The Bus. I'm going to read the first page of it, roughly. the bus has a bathroom. Other buses that leave Bengaluru from my hometown don't have bathrooms. They pull over on the highway when you have to pee, or they stop at a dhaba and the driver asks passengers to go so he won't have to make extra stops along the way. The bus is a luxury coach. Dark brown from the outside, it has a 32-inch TV and reclining seats and air conditioning, all of which makes me think, what a good deal. It's the Diwali weekend and every long-distance coach is full of techies going home. Securing a ticket was impossible, but then I came across a new office at the back of the bus station, a travel company by the name of Alfonso Tours, and they made it happen. The driver is busy tinkering with the hearing aid as I get on the bus. Don't use the bathroom for number two. Only number one, he says, not bothering to look up. I feel the air conditioning already. Sweet. The bus is nearly full. I look at my ticket, 20p. An aisle seat next to a bearded man on his phone, the music blasting out of his earbuds. I sit down and relax my feet and begin watching the Bollywood film playing on the TV. A film in which the hero shoves the heroine from the roof of a tall building. Nothing like a movie to alleviate the boredom of an overnight bus ride. We're past the outskirts of the city now, and farmland has started to appear on either side of the road. I haven't gone home in months, and I'm torn. Can you tell? Okay.
Thank you for kind of reading the first part of the bus, which is the story that kind of that opens your short story collection. I want to kind of cycle back to something you mentioned at the in your first answer about the experience of being an immigrant in the United States. The U.S. is kind of the only country that's not India that that features in your stories. There are a number of stories in your collection that deal with Indian migrants going to college or working in jobs or just kind of moving with their families to the U.S. and all of the struggles that come with it. Struggles with visas, struggle with making enough money, struggles with kind of integrating in our society. I guess, what was it about kind of the Indian migrant population in the U.S. That you wanted to capture in these stories?
You know what they say about you can only write what you know? It's just that my experience has been that of like an Indian immigrant in the States. And so the stories I've written are all sort of set either in India or in the States because those are the two places I know. If I had maybe immigrated to the UK, then maybe my stories would have been sort of set in the UK as opposed to the US. But in also in this other, as a flip side to your question, we talk a lot about these days about capitalism or, you know, the American dream or, you know, the American dream that they say it's a term that strictly comes, that's exported from America, but I feel like, America is also the sort of this epicenter for capitalism. And, it just seemed like a logical place to anchor all of my stories in that sort of heartland as well, to juxtapose how our desires are changing and shifting in this landscape of late stage capitalism.
And now I want to move to kind of talking about the story that also gives the collection its title, you know, The Best Possible Experience, which is actually one of my favorites in the collection. The Best Possible Experience stars a son, his tour bus driver father, and his many stories, some of dubious veracity at times, and the city of Goa. Why choose this setting for this story? What was it about Goa and I guess the people like the tour bus driver that made you want to kind of write a story about this setting and these characters?
Thank you. I'm so glad you like that story. It's one of my favorites as well. I knew this would be a book or that the stories would actually even come, you know, would come together after I'd written this story. because the way I see it, that story has drives the collection, or rather, that is the philosophy behind the entire collection. Why is it in Goa? I've been to Goa as a tourist, and Goa is, I mean, even for somebody who has probably never visited India, Goa is a place that they might have heard of as a tourist destination. And so the image of it just seemed like such a ripe setting to talk about how we might view stories as these places that we visit. And we visit all these destinations, or rather these different kinds of stories, in the hope that they lend some meaning to our lives, right? Like, why do we bother with art otherwise? Because we ultimately want art to speak to us, to speak to the way we inhabit our lives. And this story in particular, with the father and the son, it's fundamentally about storytelling. It's about seeing the value in storytelling. It's about by setting it in that sort of place and in that sort of era, I guess I'm giving myself enough room to sort of come up with my own meaning, my own interpretation about why I am even telling these stories.
And there are a couple themes from that story that kind of relate to a lot of other stories in collection. Let me start with the first one, which is, you know, a lot of your stories deal with parent-child relationships, you know, sons and daughters failing to understand their parents, parents failing to understand their children, often leading to kind of not great outcomes. Is there something about that particular relationship, and something about how that relationship works in the Indian context, especially kind of maybe for some of these less wealthy, maybe more rural Indian families we're talking about? Is there something, why focus on kind of the parent-child relationship in so many of your stories?
That's such a great question. I think it's just, it's a less prevalent thing, maybe in the West, but I think in a lot of Eastern families, I think filial relationships sort of take a stronger or as much prominence as romantic ones do. And I'm really interested in parent-child relationships for multiple reasons. One is that you can't really know a person until you really understand how they were raised in some ways, and also those are sometimes the strongest bonds of love that a person might have experienced, or maybe not, but at least they are really strong emotional sources in people's lives, and that is fascinating to me. And also, in many ways, I mean, it's like we expect the world to not understand us. As adults, when we move through the world, we're pained by the indifference that the world might show us. We are frustrated sometimes, and when somebody shows us kindness, we sort of take pleasure from that. We take a little bit of happiness from that, but fundamentally, I think we don't have the same degree of expectation on the world that we do on our parents. We expect our parents to understand us, and yet, there's always some friction, in the sense that these people who are probably the closest to us And yet, in some ways, we still fail to understand each other. And I'm speaking of this broadly and generalizing, but I still think there's some truth to that sentiment. And I'm really interested in exploring the nuances of all of that. And I'm also interested in any relationship that, not outside of just filial relationship, it could be just a sibling relationship, or it could be like a romantic relationship, any relationship that promises more love than what is conventionally sort of seen or conventionally acceptable. I'm always interested in that. I mean, who doesn't want to be loved more than what they currently are right now, right? So, yeah, I'm always drawn to that.
And maybe to kind of bring together two, again, the theme of the U.S. and the theme of parents, I guess, parents and children. I wanted to talk about, I believe the story is Lunch at Patty's, which is this somewhat, I guess, comic but also somewhat bittersweet scenario of this Indian family having absolutely zero idea about what to do when a white kid is potentially showing up for lunch, and then all of the miscommunication that has happened with that in the U.S. I wonder if my kind of is there what were you trying to kind of convey with that story? I think with kind of the somewhat madcap efforts by the parents to, I guess, to potentially impress this white kid that's coming to lunch.
I think it's the level of anxiety that new immigrants usually have. I think that story speaks to that. And I also wanted to capture this tension between aspirational whiteness, which is what many immigrants usually carry, especially immigrants of South Asian origin, when they move to the U.S., they want to be assimilated, they want to be integrated, and they're very, they want to please people, they want to please white people, they want to be accepted. But at the same time, it's interesting because it's the very acceptance that they crave, they're not going to get. Maybe their children will get it, but they won't get it. And it's a very interesting dynamic, and it's like you are throwing up your old life and you're moving to a new country and you really want to belong, but then you can't really belong because you don't know anything about the country that you just moved to. You don't know the cultural clues. You probably don't even know the language very well, and people are not gonna, sit with you until you pick up everything. That's just not how the world works, right? So I just find that fascinating, and I wanted to use the story as a way to talk about how the nuances in that aspirational whiteness that families tend to take on, new immigrant families tend to take on, and also to talk about, just to show for like a non-immigrant audience how much goes on in the minds of other people, immigrants. It's like I've had people, sometimes some people read the story and then be astonished by the amount of mental sort of gymnastics the family does just to please this white kid, and people will always be like, why? And if you have a question that says why are you sort of being this way, then it's probably because you are not an immigrant and you haven't seen how much how much that is a need, the need to just belong, the need to just make a home, because you are already at home, and unlike this family.
You know, on a somewhat aligned point, you know, a few of the characters in your stories are Dalit, and they kind of face prejudice because of that. You know, caste discrimination, I don't want to call maybe like a uniquely Indian phenomenon, but it's one that it's obviously more prevalent amongst Indian communities, to the point where I think that's often been used as a way to dismiss it. I know some in the U.S. have claimed that to talk about caste discrimination is anti-Indian and anti-Hindu. I know that argument's popped up a few times. But I guess to talk about caste and talk about caste discrimination, why did you decide to make it a part of some of your short stories and making some of your characters Dalit?
Again, great question. I think even the idea that that why even, you know, just even raising the idea of caste discrimination is somehow discriminatory is just laughable. I know some or even that to see that as anti-Hindu in some ways is appalling in some ways. The simplest way to look at that whole situation is to map it onto America and see it in this lens. Like, for instance, we know the amount of racism Black people experience worldwide and also in the States, right? I mean, that's a fact. And we know that America sort of was built of slave labor. Without the work of Black people, there would be no America. And I think without the work of Dalits, there would be no India as well. I think that's just a fundamental reality that many Indians are just not acknowledging on some levels. Like if you see, you know, manual scavengers, if you don't have manual scavengers, or you know, back in the day you didn't really have plumbing systems. I mean, like your literal shit is just, you know, it's being taken care of by somebody else, and who you never see. That's just an example. What I'm trying to say is that in terms of labor, Dalits have provided an extraordinary amount of labor, and it has fallen on them, and they've experienced all sorts of discrimination, and they still do. Like, for instance, it would be the same. Even it would be callous to not see discrimination being happening right now. Like, for instance, if just to map it out, to say, can anybody say there's no racism against African Americans in this country or in America or in the world? No, right? I mean, we still see instances being happening. We still see police brutality against African Americans. We still we know those instances happening, and we know there's people still have those traces. We know that still exists. And similarly, I think that sort of discrimination, caste discrimination, still exists in India. Not only in India, but also in the States. Even in companies, we've seen news reports of caste discrimination happening even in high-tech companies, sort of these technology companies like Google and whatnot. Sometimes it's not outward. People might not realize that they're doing that, but it's still there. And I wanted to make that a part of the collection because it's a reality. It's a reality of our world.
So I'd like to kind of end our conversation by going back to your own personal history. You did what me and my day job would describe as a career pivot. from working in tech to creative writing and then putting out this short story collection. And so I guess I wonder if you might share a bit about your experience and what it was like to kind of make that shift from working in tech, from working in that sector to into something like creative writing, and maybe what helped you as you kind of got your start as you traveled the path to now being a published author.
Yeah. So I, like I've sort of, I guess, spoken earlier, I was writing these stories as I was working, as I was doing my day job. I was being this programmer. I never really enjoyed my software job. It was just something for me to pay the bills. And writing was where my real life began. And I kept my tech job going until I sort of got into this MFA, which is this Master of Fine Arts program in creative writing, where I got to spend 3 years studying creative writing and just spending a lot of time thinking about writing and the book, which was an amazing opportunity. And until I got to that place, I was doing software during the day and then writing at night and at weekends, and trying to live a life that I could call my own after my after my work day had officially ended. And I did that, and then even now, I'm still working at even though I have published a book, I'm still working a tech job, and I'm doing the same. I'm working during the day. I do this tech job to pay the bills, and then at night, sometimes usually between 11 and 3 or something like that, I work on my own writings. I don't know if I answered the question. Like,
well, no, I think it's always a hard question to be like, because I think everyone's experience is so different. But still, I think this is a great place, I think, to end our conversation with Nishant Injam, author of the short story collection, The Best Possible Experience. Nishant, I actually have two final questions for you, which are, where can people find your work and all of your work, not just this book? And question two, what's next for you? What do you think the next project might be?
Sure. So my work, other than this book is available in bookstores in North America and in the subcontinent, like wherever books are sold. And then I might have some new work coming soon in terms of like essays or fiction. Like if I have any work coming soon, then it's usually up on my website. I'll have a link. If you could go to nishantinjam.com, that would be a good place for you to find any new writing by me. And then in terms of next project, I'm working on a novel. It's too early for me to talk about what exactly it's about. It's in a very fragile state at the moment.
I know. Otherwise, you feel like you might jinx it or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I would love to talk about it at a later stage.
Well, right. Hopefully you'll get a chance to talk about it soon. That'll be in a form where you're comfortable sharing more about it. You can follow me, Nicholas Gordon, on Twitter at @NickRIGordon. That's NickRIGordon. You can go to AsianReviewBooks.com to find other reviews, essays, interviews, and excerpts. Follow on Twitter at @BookReviewsAsia. That's reviews plural. And you can find many more author interviews at the New Books Network and NewBooksNetwork.com. We're on our favorite podcast apps, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Rate us, recommend us, share us with your friends to support us interviewing those writing in, around, and about Asia. Next week, join us for an interview with Maximilian Morch, ARB reviewer and also author of Plains of Discontent, a political history of Nepal's Terai, 1743 to 2019. But before then, Nishant, thank you so much for coming on the show today to talk about The Best Possible Experience.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.